Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Sun political reporter Andrew Doman.
Hello, and good morning.
While children packed their final days of summer with fun and the U.S. Congress was on its own recess in August, the Clark County and the city of Las Vegas were happy to fill the news void for us. And from horse roping controversies to tax measures, teen curfews, and reality television, it was a busy month here in Clark County. In studio this morning, we have Sun reporter Connor Schein, who covers local government. Thanks for joining us.
And thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with one of the larger elected figures in the county, Sheriff Doug Gillespie, announced just recently that he will not seek another term in 2014. That's right?
Yes, that's correct. It's kind of a bit of a shocker. It came as a surprise to a lot of people, both in the media and also in government. As we, you know, he made the announcement about 2 weeks ago, but you know, as recently as 2 weeks before that announcement, he was saying that he was intending to run for his third term as sheriff. He's had a very tough couple months here. He's had a long, tough tax fight trying to increase the sales tax in order to pay for more Metro police officers, and kind of interspersed between that, they've had several controversies with their use of force board, some others with them giving rides on the helicopters to people that maybe they weren't supposed to. So
Guns N' Roses guitarists.
Yeah, so it's been an eventful several months. I'm not sure that job ever slows down. Comes as a surprise. The sheriff won handily in his last election in 2010, was expected to do much the same this time around, although he maybe had opened himself to a challenger with some of the criticism the department has come under in recent years for officer-involved shootings. It seems like maybe he just wasn't willing to go through that campaign season again and just didn't want the job again.
Well, it sounded like he was just saying he was basically tired. Is that the whole story?
Yeah, I mean, the sheriff is obviously the figurehead of the Metro Police Department, and so everything that goes wrong there, at one point or another, kind of works its way up to him. So he's constantly under a barrage of criticism. There has not been a lot of good news coming out of that department, whether it is the officer-involved shootings or them having severe budget troubles. A lot of these problems aren't of his own creating, but many would argue that he hasn't done enough to change that department, both you know, on cultural and financial grounds, to you know, make the different changes that are needed.
Mm-hmm. And how many terms has he served?
He's in his second term right now. He still will be in office for another year and a half. He says he's going to use that time to really focus on the Metro More Cops sales tax. It's been tabled indefinitely by the county commission, although it looks like it could come up here within the next month again for another discussion and vote.
Right. And what did Sheriff Gillespie say? I mean, did he indicate that he was just tired, one of, you know, the whole like Urban Meyer coach thing, I want to spend more time with my family kind of excuse? Or?
He hasn't said a lot, but people we've talked to said that, you know, he's not a politician by a trade. He was a law enforcement officer before he took this job, and most of his career has been in law enforcement. He's not a politician, and campaigning is a very costly, time-consuming, kind of taxing drag on a person. And after going through two of those, maybe he just wasn't up for another one. There has also been some mention of health concerns, but those have obviously not been verified.
Mm-hmm. So if this job is so taxing, if it's so tiring, if you're under a constant barrage of criticism, who wants to step up for this? Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. Are there people out there who are saying, oh, yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun?
The most recent one we've had is the former assistant sheriff, Ted Moody. He was been with the department for a long time and kind of made a political he said it was on sort of moral grounds. He resigned from the department's use of force board, but at that point, you know, he was really kind of separating himself from the current sheriff, and people speculated right then that he was preparing to challenge him.
It was a politically advantageous moral move or something.
Yeah, and if you're on a board like that and the boss is not, you know, accepting the recommendation like he said he would, there is maybe a reason to, you know, justification for that decision. But at the same time, it drew a very clear line in the sand between where he stood and where the sheriff stood on the issue that would have obviously come up should they have run into each other in the election. That's not going to happen now. So far, there's three candidates that have announced. I'm sure there'll be plenty more that kind of come in and then drop out again as the race kind of prolongs itself. We have one of the maybe the more serious contenders is Robert Groner, Bobby G, the former constable of Las Vegas, Las Vegas Township, who by all means, you know, had a very successful run before he was unseated by John Bonaventure in the last election, which has, you know, caused all sorts of problems for the county. And then you've also got Lori Bish, who is a kind of a perennial candidate. She ran against the Sheriff Gillespie in 2010. Was beaten soundly in the general election by the sheriff, but she's a rank-and-file Metro police officer who would like to run the department.
Mm-hmm. And now, in Moody, we should be clear, right? So this was a controversy going back to the refigured use of force board, right?
Yeah, and, Moody in his statement, and I don't cover police quite as closely as some of my other colleagues, but Moody took a lot of credit for a lot of the changes that the department has made in recent years to its use of force policies and its use of force board. A lot of that was forced by the Department of Justice, who came in after kind of a rash of officer-involved shootings and several involving unarmed victims, and said, you know, you've got to make changes. So Moody had been heavily involved in that, and he sat on the board which reviewed use of force incidents and recommended to the sheriff whether or not that officer should be hired or fired.
And this was the officer who had shot that young man.
Who had that? I think it was a hat.
It was a man. He had a hat, and he was sitting in a car, and I guess he reached for a hat which had a sticker on it.
A little too sudden, I guess.
And he was shot in the leg by a Metro police officer. Then the use of force board, I believe, recommended that the officer be fired.
Which is very rare for them. They don't do that mm-hmm. very often. So when they do make that recommendation, you'd hope it would carry a lot of weight, because I know they don't do that lightly. Sheriff did not follow that recommendation, whether he ignored it or whether he had other reasons for not terminating that officer, you know, is unknown. But doing so really kind of drove a wedge between Moody, and then also several members, civilian members of that board, also resigned in protest after that decision.
Okay. I know Sheriff Gillespie, that's one thing he's been worried about, but I know a lot of his time, you know, I saw him several times up at the legislature talking about this, and he's really been consumed with this idea that we need to raise the sales tax here in Clark County, this so-called more cops sales tax. Yeah. It seems like it just stalled in the county commission that needs 2/3 majority to pass. And where is that? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, it seems that, you know, it has two kind of major opponents on the board that have opposed the bill for a long time. Commissioner Sisolak and then Commissioner Chris June Kiliani have both voiced different concerns, but had neither seemed to come down on it. So that only leaves the other five members, which Gillespie would need to come and solve them. Commissioner Susan Brager has been the one who has maintained she has more questions about the proposal, is worried about its impacts on the taxpayers and whether Metro, which already has a nearly $500 million budget, whether they couldn't find the money to hire more police officers by moving some of that other money around and being more sort of responsible with the funds that they are already allocated, which are significant. Gillespie would argue that they've cut and cut and cut, which they have cut, you know, on this scale, I think $60 million in the last several years. And without this money, fewer police officers are going to be on the street, which has been shown to sort of correlate with increase in crime. So you can pay more for officers, but whether what you'll get is kind of remains to be seen.
Well, what are the primary concerns? I can understand, you know, no politician wants to raise taxes. We already have an 8.1% sales tax. What are the concerns from Commissioners Sisolak and June Kiliani?
I mean, the tax itself is relatively small. I mean, every tax, you know, you stack enough of them and you'll really start to fail. This one is 0.15 cents, and this was approved by the voters back in 2004, which was obviously a very different time. The tax was never implemented as we kind of went through the recession, but Metro says now is the time to try and pass it. Sisolak has not voted. I can't think of a time he's voted for a tax increase, and he gives a lot of different reasons for not supporting this. But I mean, I think for all of the commissioners, what it comes down to is whether Metro is spending the money that they get already wisely. When they do things like give, you know, helicopter rides to Guns N' Roses guitarists, that obviously kind of raises questions about that. So it's up to Gillespie to convince them that this money would be used to put more police officers on the street and that it wouldn't go to raises, that it wouldn't be used to increase salaries of already existing officers. They've got a lot of tools over there to kind of shift officers between different funds, so following that can be tough, which is what the commission has been kind of focusing on.
But isn't that what we're talking about, though? I know the legislature basically opened this up so they can use this sales tax increase to backfill their budget. They say they have a budget deficit now. They don't have enough money. Isn't some of the sales tax increase at least going just to fill that budget hole?
And it's not supposed to, but that would kind of be the concern, that they would move some officers from their regular funds that are paid for through property tax and then shift them over to the sales tax fund and kind of balance the books that way. I think that one of the real sticking points is that Metro has about $120 or $130 million saved up in reserves from a sales tax allocation that they already get. They say they need that to help pay for officers in future years once that sales tax goes away. I think that's in about 10 years, but those officers will still obviously be on the force and they need to have some money in reserves to pay for them. The commission says, well, maybe you can tap into that savings a little bit in 5 years from now when hopefully the economy has recouped and things are going better in the Valley. We can kind of reassess the situation. But Metro's kind of resisted that. It'll be interesting to see if they give in on that point.
And Commissioner Brager, she's suppose she's going to announce or propose a different sort of version of this tax, right?
She's what's been mentioned is that she might go for an even smaller portion of this sales tax and then have Metro maybe half of the 0.15, which would be 0.075, very small, less than a tenth of a penny. So that's been mentioned. Brager is up for election next year, which always complicates things. You know, this would be an easy one. Even any tax increase is going to be tough to, you know, as it makes for fodder for an opponent and a potential challenger. So they're all really reluctant to expose themselves to that. But everybody agrees that we need more police officers on the street. The numbers have been dwindling and crime has been going up. It's just a matter of how you do it and how you pay for it.
So I know that earlier this year, the legislature, they kind of punted on this and made it the Clark County Commission's decision. And they also put a deadline on this, right? The commission.
This one does not have
a deadline. This doesn't have a deadline.
No, that's the gas tax, okay. Which we want to move to that one. Your taxes are going up there.
Yeah, so we were talking about how we can't get taxes passed, but they did just approve a gas tax, right?
And the gas tax is different than a sales tax. It's a use tax. You pay it. It's used to pay for roads, construction, and maintenance, and you pay it when you buy a gallon of gasoline to drive your car on those roads. So there's a much more kind of direct link between what you pay for and what you get in this. The RTC made a very kind of concerted lobbying effort. They got the support of a broad group of community backers, from economists to trade, you know, unions, construction groups, chambers of commerce. I think a lot of people on board. Behind this is one. It will create jobs, just by the nature of them spending up to, I think, $700 million is what this is going to allow them to build in terms of several, you know, almost over 100 new projects, ranging from the very small, you know, some road improvements in, you know, cities to highway projects, completing the 215 Beltway, starting work on the Boulder Bypass, continuing work on the airport connector. So big things like that that will kind of really drive, you know, serve as kind of the backbone of this infrastructure for decades to come.
And that was approved 6-1, right?
Yes, Steve Sisolak had to kind of carved himself out some ground on that. He'd opposed it on a variety of grounds, one being kind of the inherent unfairness of a tax that hits a driver. You know, maybe you can't afford a nice car and doesn't get good gas mileage. You're going to end up paying more of that tax than someone who can afford to buy a $70,000 electric vehicle or a more expensive hybrid vehicle, won't be paying, quote unquote, their fair share of that tax, even though they'll use the roads just as much. The problem with that is, you know, everybody would love to, because when you wrote about this, right, Andrew, the idea of using a vehicle miles traveled tax to, you know, charge somebody for every mile you drive on that road, but right now that's
that just has so many problems with it right now, and there's a privacy concern. How do you measure that? Do you put a device that monitors everyone's car and sees where they drive? I think people would have some concern with that.
We'll each have an individual drone that follows us around the city.
So the commission was kind of faced with this notion that the funding for road construction was going to drop precipitously these next few years to the point where they weren't really going to be able to do any sort of major projects. And at the same time, other cities are considering billion-dollar bonding projects. They're looking at, you know, Salt Lake, Phoenix, Denver. They're all looking at ways to improve their infrastructure. And the argument was made that the longer Nevada waits, the further we're going to fall behind. What is kind of interesting about this tax is this will go for the next 3 years. Your gas cost of a gallon of gas will go up by about 3 cents per year, topping out at about 10 cents. Then in 2016, the voters will actually get to weigh in on it. So it will be interesting to see whether they vote in a tax increase for themselves or whether they choose to kind of stop it from going any higher.
So, go ahead.
Well, one of the interesting things I've been thinking about is, does this really make the price that I pay at the pump go up? Because I was looking at a website the other day that sort of broke down kind of why we pay what we do for gas, and it looked like the majority of it is the crude oil market. Yeah, the taxes are like 12% of the price. Is it possible that, you know, we might not actually see this effect, that other things are going to play into our price of gas here than this one tax?
I mean, yeah, of course it will. And I don't think people will, on any given day, say, you know, the gasoline is higher because of this tax. But it will be. And every gallon of gas you buy, you'll be paying a little bit more. So that at the end of the year, it's going to be, they estimate, about $50 extra a year that maybe you don't notice coming out of your pocket. But when you get to the end, it's not there. It's gone into the road construction and stuff. So, you know, advocates would argue that's a fair trade to have good roads to drive on. But during the commission, I mean, you did hear a lot of people who are still struggling. They're burdened by taxes as it is. They've got, you know, their gas bills are going up, their water bills are going up, and these, you know, things are getting more and more expensive, including fuel outside of the gas tax. And this is just kind of one more kind of punch kind of thrown in there to, you know, stick it to people.
So will the RTC raise their rates, though, because now they will be paying more money for gas based on the tax that benefits them?
No, your bus will still be the same. Most of those institutions buy their gas in such large quantities that it there won't be a huge effect.
Right. Well, we'll see. I'll be watching the RTC because it seems like they could benefit on both ends of this deal. And now moving on, so there was also a controversy over a horse roping law in Clark County. Right now, as I understand, there was law passed in the state legislature, and then there's laws here. What, clear this up for us, Connor.
It's kind of complicated. For years, the county has had anti-animal cruelty ordinances on the books. In 2010, they were in the process of sort of revising those, cleaning them up. And Commissioner Christian Kelly made a small change to one of the sections regarding horse roping involved in rodeos, where you throw a rope around the animal, a horse's legs. That can, in some instances, lead to the tripping of the animal, which obviously nobody wants because they can be very harmful to the animal, the horses. But it also prevented, then, without people really realizing it, certain charreada events, which is a traditional Mexican style rodeo that are, you know, have a special place in Hispanic culture and something that, you know, is a community event. So those kind of became effectively outlawed under this ordinance without anybody realizing it. This past year, the state legislature took up animal cruelty and this horse roping and passed a law with a specific exemption saying that if you don't intentionally trip the horses, you use a special type of rope that they use in these events to catch and release, that, you know, you rope the legs and then let go and it doesn't trip the animal. That is allowed under state law, but that led to a conflict with Clark County ordinance, which is stricter and still wouldn't allow for that. And in a kind of consequence, it would have prevented an event that was planned at the South Point Casino from taking place.
So they passed it, right, in Clark County. Then the people from the event that's held at South Point raised these issues, and then they reconsidered
the South Point. Right? The organizers of the event, I don't think, quite knew what they were planning. Wasn't allowed by county ordinance until several animal rights groups got in contact with the county and said that this isn't allowed. They negotiated with the county. They went round and round. They discussed it for hours upon end. It met several different meetings. But then in the end, the county just kept their ordinance the same. They even considered allowing sort of a special exemption to allow this one event to go off to study it. That failed too. So it sounds like the organizers of the event have kind of gone back to the drawing board and are going to cut those events in an attempt to save the event and so, to the larger rodeo. Huh.
So this kind of sounds like it, at least the way I've been reading the coverage and the coverage I've been following, that you have on the one side Hispanic community who views this as okay, and an animal rights community that says no, this is not okay. Is that too simple?
It is.
Are those battle lines?
That's at the basis level, and it's what's been kind of interesting to watch about this is it is, you know, unless you're involved in this issue, a lot of people don't know what horse roping is. I didn't know about it until we started covering it, but it pitted two sort of special interest groups, your Hispanic community, and there were several political leaders who got involved on the issue, versus animal rights activists and advocates who also, you know, are very vocal. So you were kind of trading back and forth accusations. Animal rights advocates would argue that roping of any horse in any fashion constitutes animal cruelty because of the potential harm it could cause to that animal. If a horse trips, this is the way they're kind of built. It's different than maybe roping a cattle or a steer during a regular rodeo. The horse can be very seriously injured or die if things don't go right. The Hispanic communities argue that this is something they've done for decades. They take it very seriously. They treat the animals with respect. They go to great measures to make sure that the animals aren't harmed. These are, you know, expensive. Owning a horse is expensive, and they're not trying to get them hurt in this event. So those two sides kind of came into the mix, and in the end, the commissioners just, they couldn't muster the votes to, you know, they ended up siding with the animal rights advocates just because they couldn't muster the votes to change the current law, which forbid the chartiana from happening.
All right. Well, you're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. Our guest today is Connor Shine, and we're talking about developments in local government here in Clark County. Moving on, there was also in North Las Vegas, they recently had this plan for helping homeowners that were underwater, and there was this mortgage resolution partners idea. And what happened with that? And what was the idea, and then what happened?
The idea has been described in a lot of ways. Some have called it speculative. We use the word controversial because it has generated a lot of controversy. They would argue it's unique. It's something that has never been tried before in the country, and it involves using a city's power of eminent domain to acquire, is the word they use. Others would use seize, is maybe a bit more of a pejorative word. A specific type of loan. These are the loans, especially in North Las Vegas, that were during the recession and sort of the lead up to the crash, were packaged into those mortgage-backed securities, divvied up and owned by thousands upon thousands of individual investors who all kind of invest in a trust with lots of these mortgages in it. Those mortgages were also often the ones that were the most toxic, the ones that weren't held to the same loan standards that we used to do. And so a lot of the homeowners on these were underwater and are still struggling to dig themselves out even 5 years later. Mortgage resolution partners has argued that the existing state and federal programs have not done nearly enough to help these homeowners. And so they came up with their plan to propose. They said that they would put up the money and all the city had to do was help them acquire the mortgage, which might require them to use eminent domain. And they would use the money, buy the mortgage for what they viewed as market value. There's a lot of kind of disagreement over what that would constitute. And then they would refinance it back to the homeowner. The homeowner gets to keep their house, less principal. The city avoids a potential foreclosure. And then, of course, MRP makes a little bit of money on the side. But
of course,
they sold it as, you know, a benefit to the community, generated huge blowback from bankers and realtors who said this is a terrible idea. And at their most recent city council meeting in North Las Vegas, kind of said they didn't know enough to pass this. They, as it were, kind of punted on the issue. They've studied it for 6 months and they decided that they weren't going to say yes or no, and instead they would wait for the state government to weigh in on the legality before they got themselves into any more trouble.
Well, I mean, on the one hand here, you do have these sort of sympathetic characters, right? These families, these people who are maybe struggling to get by in the homes that they're in, and you have a city who they want to take care of their citizenry here. But on the other hand, eminent domain, that's usually – this is really unprecedented, right? That's usually where a government, in really outstanding, extraordinary circumstances, would kind of take over private property, right?
Yeah, and you heard a lot of the politicians kind of talk about how special of a power and a tool eminent domain is, how reluctant they are to use it, because that's, you know, as soon as you use that, that's, you're going to kind of get, you know, branded as that, and there's always this kind of implication that there's a taking involved and that maybe there isn't a fair exchange, and people are being forced into these kind of transactions unwillingly. Traditionally, your eminent domain would involve, you know, roadway construction or maybe a school.
And for which people get fairly compensated, right? At least in theory.
In theory. And this was just on an entirely different level because it involves taking a mortgage, which is a sort of like a piece of, it's not hard physical property, it's a financial kind of institution or financial tool. So there was questions about whether that was allowable under state law, what constituted fair market value for these. MRP had a very high paid team of lawyers who said that this is permissible under Nevada state law, but North Las Vegas has gone through a lot of turnover in recent months. They recently lost their city attorney. They also got two outside legal opinions, which they're not sharing. So it's unclear what their advisement they got on that. But when it kind of came to it, there had been a total sea change from 2 months ago when the council tentatively voted to go forward with MRP and let them start kind of researching and, you know, entered into an agreement with them to last night where they terminated that agreement and kicked it up to the state to wait for some more guidance.
Gotcha. So boot it down the road, let somebody else deal with it.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if mortgage resolution partners can recover from this. I get the sense they've spent a lot of money in recent months lobbying the North Las Vegas City Council. One lawsuit's already been filed. They're defending against another lawsuit in California, and those could only multiply. So they've spent a lot of money so far, and they have not made any money yet. So they have an incentive kind of to make this work, but Andrew, you know as well as I do, how long will it take for the state legislature to decide?
Right. The state's not even – they're not even going to meet until 2015. So, I guess that comes back to the point, like, for anyone who's underwater, for anyone who's been watching this thing and thinking, well, gee, maybe I can finally get some help here. Really, at the end of the day, nothing happened, right? I mean, these people are in the same situation they were in when the discussion about this whole thing started, right?
Well, one point that has been made, and it's not obviously universal across the valley, but home prices are on the rise, you know, by as much as 30% year over year. So people are maybe a little less underwater than they were, you know, 6 months or a year ago. But at the same time, when people were $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 upside down on their home mortgages, so you get a lot of ground to make up. And the argument made by mortgage resolution partners is that without significant principal reduction, these people are never going to be made whole again.
And now, moving on, we have downtown Las Vegas, obviously there's been an issue with increased security down at, you know, First Fridays. They're saying teenagers are drinking. And so all this has led to our mayor, Carolyn Goodman, proposing a teen curfew that I believe originally would have encompassed downtown and a little bit of maybe East Las Vegas. What was her proposal?
I think it just would have been between the highways and then out towards Maryland, specifically targeting Fremont East and the Fremont East Entertainment District. The idea was to, the city already had a curfew in place, as it turns out, but the city, they're trying to expand that even a little bit more.
But the city has a curfew?
Yeah.
Right now?
That's pretty common in most places.
10 p.m.
on weekends.
For what?
Anybody under 18.
Anyone under 18.
And now it will be 9 p.m. for anybody under 18. You will not be allowed to be out on Fremont Street or Fremont Street Experience without an adult with you. It's a relatively minor change. I think the mayor hopes that it will be kind of one more tool to give law enforcement security, the casinos, the restaurants and bars down there, just another measure of control over the situation down there, which has, by all accounts in recent months, kind of exploded to an unexpected level, where there was a shooting down there recently. You know, there's reports of young people, whether they're under 18 or just under 21, kind of sitting outside and drinking out of packaged liquor. So the city's actually taken sort of this whole issue of downtown, and a lot of it revolves around the availability of alcohol. And they're studying that, and they're hoping to come back within the next month or so with some recommendations to try and get a hold of how much alcohol they will allow in a neighborhood like that. There's been several applications that are on hold for new liquor stores that would sell, you know, bottles of liquor, cases of beer on the Fremont Street Experience. There are already several there. Businesses along there have said that's too many as it is, and that this is going to only lead to an increase of underage drinking. So the council's kind of taking a step back and trying to figure out how to balance those competing interests and make sure that, you know, allowing businesses to open up, but also making sure that the area is not just soaked in alcohol and drunk teenagers.
We're all out of time. Thanks for joining us, Connor Schein.
Yeah, no problem.
And you've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Our producer is Steven Zeller. My co-host, as always, is Andrew Doman. And I'm Tobin LePan. See you next week.